We are going to first work Senate Bill 841, which is the reserve fund, and have a little discussion as a committee on that and see if Paul Winter shows up on that issue and shows us the amendment, which I think just reads the amendment. Well, let me open the work session on 841, and then we'll do the two House bills right after we discuss 841. So, committee, as we know, 841 is the reserve fund policy that the Oregon Business Association has brought us, using the ending balance to build your reserve fund. The discussion that we had a few days back was regarding, and actually that's a good point Barbara makes, is that when we left this, there was an open motion from Senator Scherr to adopt the -3s. So that is before us right now as we reopen this work session. We have a motion on the table, Senator Scherr's motion, to adopt the -3s. The discussion around that was, should the money go to the general fund, as the -3s express, that if you once you reach that 5%, and remember that the 5%, the revenue office's estimate was we would reach the 5% on January 1st, 2010. So hopefully we have a few years until we reach that 5%. The question we had before us in Senator Scherr's motion was, do we do it to the general fund, the excess if you actually got to that 5%, or do you put that excess into the school capital matching grant, which is where we go today? With that, I might recognize Senator Metzger, who has a concept for us to consider.
Well, you know, our discussion on this, Mr. Chair, previously, we had a number of discussions. One, do we need a separate and distinct fund, a reserve fund? And I argued for the fact that that would probably be a good idea based on the dynamics that that people see on this, even though in reality the stability fund accomplishes that purpose. We just haven't articulated, I think, really well to the public that this, in fact, does that. That was the first point. But as I mentioned also, I think the overriding purpose of moving ahead is more important, and so sticking to the stability fund, I think it's fine. The problem is by especially with increased lottery revenues, and if in fact our economy, you know, has even a modest upward tick that is sustained for a while, we could realistically meet the 5% cap of the stability fund in relatively, by legislative accounts, short order, 48 months or so. And then we're not building the fund to the point that we really want it to go. If on the -3s it goes back to the general fund, well, then you're basically, you just put it right back in the general fund, so you really haven't achieved the goal of saving anything. So I don't think that works. I think we had talked about the idea of then raising the cap sometime in the future. And I would say, well, why wait for sometime in the future? We might as well raise the cap now by sending an SJR out to the voters, you know, to run parallel with the passage of this, and ask the voters the two questions, which is, do you want to increase the size of the stability fund, and number two, and hence also increase the size of the reserve for the state? Now, the voters have clearly, overwhelmingly supported the idea of both saving money but also supporting education. So I think that this is a pretty easy sell to the public. Don't understand why it would be any difference 2 years from now. But keeping in mind, it has to go to the general election ballot. So if we waited 2 years and then the next general election ballot for that to appear, we could be up to the cap by that point. I just think it would be prudent, Mr. Chair, to move ahead with 841 with the -4 amendment. And I think that is a stronger amendment. And then move parallel, perhaps, with SGR 19 reworked to send out to the public simultaneously the increase of the cap so that we have these running on parallel tracks. And I would support that as a dual
system. As a dual package. Okay, so that's so just so we're clear on the choices we have before us, is one is the -3s with the stability fund and then the excess, you know, once you reach that 5%, if, and that's a big if you get there, we're at 2 now, the excess would go to the general fund. The -4 say, no, status quo. The money goes in the stability fund with all the constitutional protections that are there, which I really like, of making it hard to get at that money. But then the money would go in the school capital matching if you reach 5%. And then the third, I guess, choice we have is Senator Metzger's point. Should we go in the next couple of years to voters and actually ask them to bump that cap? further comments or discussion amongst the committee of where we should head and where the votes would be.
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, I think that the need for stability fund is certainly or ending a reserve fund is generally bipartisan, widely accepted. I think that because we have the Education Stability Fund in the Constitution, we probably would be wise to move ahead with this and to try convince people that we need to raise the cap so we have a larger ending balance. So I would support Senator Metzger's proposal to move this forward and to also move the SJR.
SJR. And I think we have an SJR that does bump the cap to 10%. So we could do that. We could choose 8 or 10, but I'm happy to move that back. My only fear is we have discussed, do you go to voters now and risk perhaps losing that vote? But I guess there's no practical ramifications if you lose it. Senator Brzezinski.
Mr. Chair, I think it's a good argument to go ahead and go now, because if we, quote unquote, lose the vote, we can prepare and know what we're going into in 07 are those who are going to be looking at those issues. And the reality is, right now, it may be the freshest for voters as to what the limitations we currently have. And we may actually find that it would be more receptive now than if we have a very strong economy kick in, where people may not be quite as looking to the future as to the next cycle that we're going to hit at some point. And so I think that I do support Senator Metzger's suggestion.
And so do you find yourself in support of the dash fours also, which kind of keeps the status quo?
Yeah, I was going to ask Senator Starr, based on his comments, maybe he wants to rescind the motion that he's got there, and make a motion on the dash fours.
Let me get Senator George.
George.
And we want to poll him. So, Senator George.
I'm with you on this. I'm just trying to think, what would be the negative campaign you would run against increasing that cap?
I don't know. Yeah, I want to save as much.
absolutely right, because everyone's recognizing increasing costs. Therefore, you know, the bigger the fund is going to be, the better the circumstances. Particularly, I mean, it would really get this issue off the table, you know, if we did have that significant downturn again. So I'm sure glad this came up this morning. I think this is a great idea, because I was sitting there the other day thinking, why do we feel like we're restrained with just a certain amount of money when most of us anticipate greater costs in the future? Maybe we should raise it. Mm-hmm. It looks like everyone was thinking the same direction.
Yeah, I just I remember what a college savings plan, that referral failing 4 or 5 years ago, and none of us understanding how it failed. But I'm happy to move forward. There's no downside in my mind of putting something on the ballot. We can have that drafted that would do that SJR that would bump it. I guess we'll have that discussion from 8, or do we want to go to 8% or 10%? But I'm happy to do that, just noting that if it did fail in May of 2006, we at least discussed that that's a possibility, although I don't see the arguments against it of why you would constrain the state from moving from 5 to 8%. Okay, so is Senator George the maker of the motion?
Yeah, he's the one who brought forward the dash 3s. So, I mean, if you don't want the dash 3s, he should maybe rescind his...
I thought it was too.
It just needs to be rescinded. If you don't want the dash 3s, either vote on it or us.
If we can for us, we can just vote it down and it's done.
Yeah, let's do that.
So, on the table, Senator Starr has moved.
I like voting no.
Yeah, sure. We can get a
unanimous.
Let's just that. We haven't done that. Let's just
practice.
We can even speak against it and despair. So the dash threes are in front of us. Senator Starr has made the motion that the dash threes be adopted. Is there any discussion? And Barbara, would you like to call the roll on the dash 3 amendments?
Senator George.
No.
Senator Metzger.
No.
Senator Posansky.
No.
Vice Chair Sarah.
Having heard the compelling argument, I'm going to vote no on my whole motion.
Chair Deckard.
I will join Senator Starr and vote no on the dash threes.
Mr. Chair, is this what we call consensus building?
We all dislike those dash threes. So the motion actually failed on the dash three amendments. Recognize Senator Starr.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 841.
Senator Starr has moved the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 841. Any discussion on that? I'll give anyone in the audience the opportunity before we pass this, if anyone has a compelling argument to make that feels we should consider. Hearing none, is there any objection to the dash four amendments?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 841 as amended to the floor with the new pass recommendation.
Chairman Decker, can we just clarify, though, there was another amendment, right, that you brought forward to amend 841 in the last hearing?
We had adopted
dash one,
which right? were mostly technical.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure we're clear. We have more than one amendment besides the dash four. We have a dash one in there, right?
Which have already been adopted.
Which have already been adopted.
Senator Starr.
I made the motion.
You have made the motion.
I heard him.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 841 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion of that motion. Senator Metzger.
Just as a procedural one, I think it would be advisable to for us to move the SPR as soon as we can get that back so that these can run parallel on the floor because they are tied together. And when they actually hit the floor, I think it would be good to have both of those run on the floor at the same time.
I agree with that. I think that's a good point. My only thing is timing, if it's feasible to do it in a timing sense. But it would be nice to have them back-to-back because they are...
I mean, I think we could ask Senator President to hold the third reading until the other one catches up.
Good thinking. And we can hold, actually, in revenue. Any further discussion on Senate Bill 841?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Zansky.
I think there's comments coming in from the side of the dais here that we may need to hear because we may have something on the record that may not be correct on 841.
Mazin, you can speak from that microphone right there.
It seems like you've amended the bill with a dash two.
So I think the record just reflects we say dash one. But
oh, I see it's the dash two. Here's the dash two.
Yeah, yeah.
Good catch.
Yeah, so the dash twos were adopted on the previous day. I don't think there's that. Once you've adopted them, you've adopted them.
Right. It's just, I think, on the record here, saying that we said something that actually wasn't it. So if we just maybe just say that it's actually the dash twos that had been previously adopted.
A historic day, but we up here said something that actually didn't match what actually occurred. So the dash twos and the dash fours were adopted on Senate Bill 841. Those were the two amendments that have been adopted to this bill, the dash twos and the dash fours. Further discussion? Any objections to Senator Starr's motion that Senate Bill 841 as amended would move to the floor with a due pass recommendation? So ordered. I will carry that bill, and we will get an SJR before us as soon as we can. I guess we'll... If folks have a preference, 8 or 10%, we can draft it either way. Bump it to 8 or bump it to 10.
I'd say 10.
You got one for 10.
I'm a 10.
10. 10. 10. We'll have one back that bumps it to 10. Thank you. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2448.
Yes, Senator Decker.
Yeah. What's that?
Chairman, Deckard, and committee members, with House Bill 2448 and then your other bill, House Bill 2451 in gross, they're both Department of Revenue bills, so they're pretty straightforward. With this one, basically, it's dealing with the Department of Revenue refunds. And again, as we discussed yesterday about the time period, under current law, personal income tax refunds can be claimed up to 3 years from the due date of the return or 2 years from the time period that any tax or portion of the tax was paid, whichever is later. Basically, though, what's happening is there's an inconsistency in the law depending on exactly what type of payments you've made. So this is permitting the Department of Revenue to refund amounts determined to be overpayments on original tax returns which were filed more than 3 years after the due date. But it's limiting the refund amount to the amounts that are paid within two years from the date of filing of the claim for a refund. It's then conforming the language to corrective legislative form, and it takes effect 91 days after the end of legislative session. So the revenue impact, I mean, you could see some additional reductions in personal income taxes from the allowing additional refunds, but it should be minimal each year, less than $50,000.
Ms. Deborah Buchanan.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, this is pretty straightforward. The bottom line is that a person who has overpaid their taxes through withholding, for example, who does not file their return on time, cannot get a refund if they ask for the refund on the return more than 3 years after the due date. However, if they file the return more than 3 years after the due date and don't ask for a refund, we can give them a refund. So it's a very strange situation that's brought about just by the technical wording in the law. This would put the filers on the same footing, whether they ask for a refund or not. If they're filing more than 3 years late, we can give them a refund, but the refund is limited to taxes paid within the prior 2 years.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
My notes show that both Sam and Bob support the bill.
Well, that's endorsement enough for me. Any other questions? I like that. Any other questions for Ms. Buchanan? Thank you, Deborah. Let's see if Ed Johnston supports the bill. Mr. Ed Johnston. If we can get Sam, Bob, and Ed.
Good morning. My name is Ed Johnston, Lincoln County. And that is a conflict sort of I have, partly on supporting and partly not, because my frustration is that taxpayers are the ones in the long run that could lose on the two-year deal. And maybe that should be extended for probably 4 years, but because the state gets enough money as it is. And that's my concern with that, and a lot of taxpayers would have the same concern, so that's my point of view on that.
Great.
You know.
Appreciate that. And I'm sure the department will take note of that, that a suggestion was made that that it would be a refund for more than 4 years rather than 3 years. Questions? Comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing, and I would be ready to open the session on Senate Bill 2448.
House Bill
2448.
Move House Bill 2448 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2448 to the floor with a due pass recommendation discussion. Any objection to that motion? So ordered. House Bill 2448 is moved to the floor with a due pass. Did I do that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My mind was wandering. Senator Starr, would you like to carry that?
We'd love to.
Great. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2451. Lose that.
Senator Deckard and committee members, with House Bill 2451A engrossed, this is dealing with the Working Family Child Care Tax Credit. And so basically, this is dealing with the initial minimum requirement of $6,000 of earned income to qualify for the Working Family Child Care Tax Credit come from Oregon sources for non-residents. So this is the major change. Now, under current law, we're basically saying that if they have $6,000 of earned income coming from anywhere, they can qualify for the Working Family Child Care Credit. But this is after some audits that the Department of Revenue did. They were bringing forward to you the policy question of whether or not you wanted to be having that minimum threshold really apply to people who maybe don't even have Oregon source income, and you would still be allowing them to have an earned income tax credit. It's specifying also that that you have to have the greater of either the federally adjusted gross income or the Oregon adjusted gross income for the tax year must not exceed 250% of the federal poverty level, and it applies to tax years beginning on or after 2005 here. So basically what this is doing is it's dealing with non-residents that basically may have earned income somewhere else but not in Oregon, so then they would be disqualified from the initial threshold in order to meet for the Working Family Child Care Tax Credit. And this, even though this bill doesn't really specifically say, I mean, it says who is an Oregon resident with at least $6,000 of earned income for the tax year. I'm also assuming here that we're saying if they were an Oregon resident at any time during the year, so it could apply to part year residents, just would have to meet that $6,000 of earned income also. So basically, when you're just looking then at those non-residents, that's where the revenue increase then comes from, because we would be denying some non-residents the Working Family Child Care Tax Credit. So it's roughly in 2005-07 biennium an additional $53,381, and then by 2009-709 biennium, $55,537. So this is basically from the Department of Revenue. They went and looked through those audits again and examined the returns from non-residents and sorted those through. And basically we found that most all of the residents, like there was 93% of all the personal income tax returns that were claiming the Working Family Child Care Credit were Oregon full-time residents. So there was really only a remaining 7% that were either non-residents or part-year residents. And then looking at just the non-residents, there were approximately 200 non-residents that were being disqualified would be underneath this bill with an average credit amount of $127.
Thank you. Any questions for Elizabeth? Ms. Buchanan.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Staff has done a good job of explaining this, Mr. Chair, and the example in the handout talks about a person who works in Vancouver and is a non-resident, but this could apply to any non-resident. You could, for example, have a person who lives and works in New York and simply has income from Oregon sources, perhaps from rental property or investment sources in Oregon, and they would qualify for this credit based on child care expenses paid to work at the job in New York. So we weren't sure that that was exactly what you intended when you had an earned income requirement in the bill. The original legislation was proposed to help people with their child care expenses that they incur in order to work or to attend school. There wasn't a requirement that that work occur in Oregon. And so we're just bringing that to you as a policy decision for you to make and give us some clear guidance on what you would prefer.
Questions for Ms. Buchanan, please.
So Jude, Tom, and Tammy probably won't like it, but it's good policy since they're not providing child care in Oregon, nor are they residents.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, unlike Sam and Bob on the previous bill, these people would not qualify for the credit since they are not working in Oregon, not paying child care expenses in Oregon. The only connection that they have with Oregon is that they have some Oregon source income.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, they would not be able to take a Working Family Child Care Credit since they don't have Oregon source earned income.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, it makes sense to me, Tim.
Good policy.
Yeah. Anything further for Ms. Buchanan? Thank you for bringing this to us.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
It does seem like a good policy. Close public hearing, open a work session on...
Chair, I move to House Bill, House Bill 2451 to forward the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2451 as engrossed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on that? Any objection to that motion? So ordered. And Senator George, would you like to take Judy's and Jude's and Tammy and Tom's case to the Senate floor? Great. We are adjourned till 9 tomorrow. Thank you, committee.